flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I want to react to that and talk about the love and how much of that is truly to go around for the Cavaliers. But Derek Rackley, Westwood One, joins us in 20 minutes as well.
The Entertainment and Debates with Ken Carmen, Anthony Wyman, don't stop at 10 a.m. Catch the emerging podcast scene Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10:15. Listen live on the 92.3 The Fan Extra Channel on the Odyssey app at 92.3thefan.com. Presented by Extend Technologies, or check out every single archived episode.
I will say the greatest example of groupthink amongst NBA people is the idea that there was one guy that thought to put Darius as a starting guard from the Cavs and not Donovan, right? Like that it's Donovan versus Darius. Oh, that's nice. Darius, you're not going to be here. It's Donovan.
I don't even think they looked at it as like Donovan versus Darius. I think they just looked at it like Donovan's the star. No. He gets the pick. And then Dan Devine, of all people, was like, hey, no, Darius needs some more recognition. Maybe Darius's campaigns in the previous couple weeks, it paid off in the way of Dan Devine. I'm not sure. But I love the idea of it. He's like, listen, I know he wasn't going to get there. He didn't have the support. It wasn't going to happen, but I needed to basically put it out there that he deserved as much recognition, if not more, than what Donovan's got.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we've talked about ever since Fedor, I want to say about almost 3 weeks ago now.
And by the way, Fedor this morning, I believe, put both of them in his All-Star thing. I want to make sure that's clear as well. He didn't choose an either or, he just put them both in.
But 3 weeks ago, Fedor joined us, and he had talked about from Darius's camp, there's concern about, is he getting enough credit for the Cavs' incendiary start to the season? I mean, the fact that, and this is not an anti-Donovan thing, but it is just, and it is specific to... Two undersized guards hurt you in more than one way. It hurts you on the court and what you can and can't do and how people perceive your value. And it also hurts you in terms of, well, okay, I'll let one of them here. But, I mean, this is a wing lead. It's a big league. It's a big guard league. Like, it's just it's another way of showing that, yeah, it's really, really tough for both really damn good undersized guards to get the credit they deserve.
Yeah, that's why Donovan had to take a step back in many respects, right? But that's why I thought it was interesting that Dan kind of asked the question. Wondering, is it Donovan taking a step back that is letting Darius shine, or is Darius just being so awesome that this is how this is shaking out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it goes without Donovan.
Right? I agree with that.
Like, and so that's that is, I don't know that we've talked enough about that. Just how much credit Donovan deserves for saying, I'm cool with my minutes getting cut. I'm cool with other guys scoring more.
Most people across the city, I think, were the only ones that have at least advocated for it and had the discussions about should his MVP vote be higher because of that realization.
Well, and because the reality is we all look at this and we know, like, there are people outside of Cleveland who will look down on Donovan. Oh, only 23.5 points per game.
If you do the quick basketball reference look, which isn't fair to anybody, that's how you come up, though, with articles like where Dan's like, oh, every number you point to says Darius is having a better season than Donovan.
So I don't mean this specific to Dan. I think it is how a lot of analysis goes.
It's how you have to sometimes if you cover a national stage that way, you know?
Yeah, okay, but...
There's how many games on each night?
But
when every team plays 82 games, it's the same problem baseball has. You know, how did the baseball writer in Seattle actually tell you whether or not he thinks Lane Thomas is good at baseball? It's really tough. There's 162 games a year.
And you can watch three less Knicks games a week.
Yeah,
you can watch three less Celtics games
a
week.
That's the problem, though, is that the national writers know my bread and butter is baked into the Lakers, the Knicks, the Celtics, all the top teams. So I have to have actual thoughts on who comes off the bench with the Lakers. They just don't have to do with the Cavs.
Well, you're right, and it should be noted.
I hate that I'm right.
That you're right.
you hate just, that I'm right, but it's how it is.
If there is a thought that, because it that's why I asked the trade value question at the end of it.
Yeah,
is there's a part of me in the back of my head that, as much as I'm enjoying this, knowing how just absolutely reductive so many of the takes are on the Cavs and on the guards and on how they fit together and how they play together, there is a part of me that wonders if there's just a natural statute of limitations. Not that that's Darius is doing, not that that's Donovan's doing, but it's just how the NBA works. At some point, credit does matter because it impacts your bottom line.
Yeah, and I think that's something we haven't discussed enough. We want to talk about things we haven't discussed enough is the idea that when it comes to Donovan got everything he wanted for this offseason.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, listen, we all heard the rumblings about what was going on with Donovan and JB Bickerstaff. Seems like Donovan won that battle. And on top of it, he's got his guy, Johnny Bryant, assistant coach. Like, Donovan's getting what he wants. And I think this is him saying, now I'll give you what you're asking for. Well, you know, where I'll make this more of a team game than just a Donovan show.
But I don't think Darius would still be getting what he wants, because what Darius wants, this is...
Oh, no, I was talking Donovan.
Inevitably, well, yes, but I think I don't know you can give Darius. If Darius's ambitions are to be heralded as one of the 15 best players in the NBA,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to do it on a roster with Evan and Donovan. You're never going to get that.
There's just not enough room
that.
At the end.
And yeah. And by the way, it's insane, because if you just swapped out Darius for Jaylen Brown, people would have no problem going, yeah, well, Donovan, Evan, and Jaylen are. But because they play the same position, there's going to be some sort of block into how people
right.
perceive Darius. And that gets back to the thinking, like, is there a statute of limitations on this? I'm not trying to be alarmist, because it could be 2 years from now. It could be 5 years from now. But at some point, I can empathize with Darius being like, wait. We just won 68 games, and all I hear is Donovan and Evan, and not in the, like, pay me more attention, but yeah, I mean, my money's going to be tied to this. My ability to make third team All NBA is tied to this.
Everything down to shoe endorsements are yeah. tied to whether or not people pay attention to you. I mean, it's a reality. Listen, when the big three in Miami happened, Chris Bosh was the third man. You know, like there's a clear identification to all
of
this.
And he did not like it.
No, he didn't, because he was a star in Toronto.
He accepted it until he didn't.
Until he didn't. Yeah. He was winning titles, and you could see he got mad about the whole ordeal. And I don't know. It felt like Darius at times this year had kind of swerved into that lane. Like, all right, I'm not getting enough credits. So that's why he became so vocal. That's why he was talking at every turn to ESPN, doing the podcast with Draymond Green. Like, this is how you got vocal Donovan. Listen, vocal Darius. I don't know Dan Devine's relationship with Darius, but what I do know is that Dan mentioned him doing a piece with Darius last year. Like, clearly, there are people out there that Darius wants to go ahead and say, hey, prop me up a little bit.
Well, and I mean, I think, like, even the Cavs, like, how much can you do to get Darius? And none of this is me wanting any of this. But it is a complication when you have, and the Cavs really are, the classification of a super team. If you have three or more all-stars, if you've got three or more max contracts, yeah, you're a super team, even if it doesn't look like the way it did in Miami, where LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh moved media traffic like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they don't treat you that way, yeah, you've got superstars on your team. And, you know, and I think some of this is just to point out, I think it's inevitable. I think it's inevitable at some point you are going to have to choose between Darius and Donovan, not because of anything between them, but because of how the NBA works and how it's just natural that these things eventually grow into something else. And I don't. This is the one way in which I wonder if the Cavs are suited for this.
Let me ask you this.
Can I get to it real quick?
Yeah.
I don't know they're suited to make that decision when it needs to be made. Meaning, like, Kobe's so patient with stuff and so deferential. That's not a bad thing, by the way. But I don't know that Kobe's going to naturally notice when it's time to make the right decision. and choose between those two, because if you do that, you can get the next player to play perfectly along either one of those guards, whomever you choose. You can do that, but you have to be the guy that's driving it. You can't wait for Darius or Donovan to say, I'm not getting the credit I want, I'm out. And I think that's a really tough, and let me put it this way. I said, I don't know if Kobe's a guy. I don't know anybody is. It's a really, really tough decision, and one you try and put off as long as you can.
How would this have gone down if the All-Star nods had made Darius a starter and not Donovan?
I mean, I think Donovan's beyond, he's not beyond it.
No, we can't assume he's beyond
it. But I think
like part of why he's taking the step back is it's come with the idea that he's getting all the accolades and the acclaim still. And when ESPN does the showcase, they put his name, they put his face. He's the guy on the marquee still. If all of a sudden that became Darius Garland, does he have a snapback reaction that maybe isn't the greatest? I don't know.
I think Donovan is I think this step back shows you where his priorities are.
I would hope
his
so.
His priorities are in the postseason.
If that's the case,
postseason.
Then you only have to massage Darius's ego in all of this.
No, it's so complicated. Team dynamics with money, and I don't want to throw this because they seem to be doing a really good job of subjugating it now. But ego and it's so complicated, and so I would tend to think like when it comes to All-Star game appearances, I don't know how much that's going to matter to Donovan ever again, because I think he understands the correlation. Of if I'm the guy that wins them a championship, or if I'm the guy that gets them to the Eastern Conference Finals and I'm dropping 25, 30 points a game in the playoffs, all of a sudden I'm going to be an All-Star again next year. Does that make sense?
No, I think he knows that built in. I think that's baked into that idea. I'm worried about Darius in this whole thing. And then what you laid out there, the reason why I think they're not going to have to necessarily answer to that in maybe not for years to come is that idea. You just make sure that Darius can play the way that he is right now, getting the recognition from guys like Dan Devine. Listen, Darius knows he's not ever going to be a top five player in this league. That's not Darius Garland. But as long as he's able to get some recognition, I think he'll be all right.
I could see it being an issue as soon as this summer. And I think the Cavs have to prepare for that. You don't have to think it's going to happen. But you have to prepare for the idea that if this summer, the trade demand might come this summer. And again, I'm not forecasting anything. I'm just like you and I have talked more about this conversation, which is about Darius and credit.
Yeah.
And I give credit to Fedor for making sure it's out there and having this as part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. It should be.
Because it should be, and this is a logical extent of a conversation of two similar players on a team that, let's be honest, unless LeBron's in town, does not get the kind of credit they need. But it would not surprise me, even if you do get to the Eastern Conference Finals and you push this thing to seven games, but you lose. Hell, it wouldn't surprise me if you won the damn thing and the conversation came up. Because in the end, it's not a conversation that the Cavs control, right? The Cavs cannot control the way people view their players. You can throw it out there,
right,
but it doesn't mean they're going to take the bait.
That's why this is a good thing, seeing Darius get the spotlight like this and seeing him have some of these conversations. No, but it's Yahoo. It's a national platform. Like, people are discussing this all day long. Like, this is a good thing for Darius. I'm not saying it takes everything away, but if, like, Darius wanted some recognition, this is a part of that. It's just figuring out how much recognition he'd actually need. And if you did make it and have an Eastern Conference Finals appearance or make it to the NBA Finals, would that enough be enough recognition on top of it?
The conference title games this weekend in the NFL. Derek Rackley tells us whether he leans Chiefs or Bills at 422 on 92.3 The Fan. Chiefs, Bills, you're going to hear it right here on 92.3 The Fan, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One, and a man who's going to be on the broadcast team coming up this weekend on the Chiefs-Bills game on Westwood One. Joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Derek Rackley joins us. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you joining us here. I know you're a very professional man. Which way are you leaning, though, in this game, Chiefs-Bills?
You know, I'm not supposed to lead into that, right?
That's just which one do you think is actually going to win? Come on.
I'll tell you this. I mean, not that it's kind of become a thing from broadcasters. I really don't like to get into stuff like that because that's never how I've approached a game. Like, I just approach it. I try to prepare as best as possible. Obviously, I've covered the Bills the last couple of weeks. I was the color analyst in the booth in the first game against Denver, and then I was on the sidelines against Baltimore, so I've had a chance to see them a little bit more recently. However, I did have the Chiefs game a few weeks ago during the holidays, so I got a chance to see them up close and personal. And here's what I will tell you. It seems as if, like, all of the dominoes are falling in the right direction for the Buffalo Bills, right? There's so much discussion out there about how Josh Allen, can he get this team to a Super Bowl? The amount of wins that he and the Buffalo Bills have put up over the last 5 or 6 years, but yet have not tasted a Super Bowl, going up against a guy who, in my opinion, is kind of following in the footsteps of Tom Brady. Like, he's becoming that guy that just has the it factor that constantly gets the best of his teammates, quite frankly, gets the best of the other team as well, and has been a consistent force in Super Bowls, right? So it's like, I don't really know which way to go in it, because could I bet against Patrick Mahomes and what he's done over the past few years? It's hard for me to say that I can do that, because he's got that ability, just like Tom Brady did, to consistently find ways to win and get his team to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, Derek, it's hard, because if his last name wasn't Mahomes, I think we'd just be viewing this Chiefs offense entirely differently. 15th scoring offense, and their quarterback didn't throw for 4,000 yards, had a league average passer rating. If his last name wasn't Mahomes, I just wonder how we'd look at this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at his numbers and you would say, oh, well, gosh, that's not necessarily the best season for Patrick Mahomes. But here's one thing I'll tell you. I was just listening to some different press conference interviews, because I like to see what the players have to say. So I was listening to the Buffalo Bills, and I listened to Josh Allen, I listened to Von Miller, I listened to Deion Dawkins today. And the one thing that they were asking Von Miller that I thought is spot on is, what do you see from Patrick Mahomes and what they've been able to do? Now, remember, Von Miller's got a little bit different perspective, because he played against Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid when he was in the same division when he was with the Broncos. And so he's got a little bit different taste of this organization. And he said it best. He said, that team is doing anything that they have to do to just win football games. If they need Patrick Mahomes to throw 6 touchdowns and score a lot of points, they can do that. If they need to win like a 13-10 type game, they'll do that. And nobody is really getting their ego or their stats in the way. I mean, you could look at the last matchup when these two teams played. Now, granted, that was a Chiefs loss, but Travis Kelce was basically not a factor in that game. However, every single time Kelce has played against the Bills in the postseason, Kelce is absolutely dominated. So is that kind of a precursor of what we're going to see in this game? But I think that's kind of been the season for the Chiefs. They're doing what they need to do, whether it's offense, defense, or special teams, to win that individual game. And they've been doing a great job at that.
Derek, it's kind of fascinating. If you look at the first of the potential three-peat that they won 2 years ago, right? They had a top five offense, and I believe their defense was ranked 18th in what we all thought was a rebuilding year. Then 2 years later, right now, we're sitting here, I believe they have a top five defense, and I think their offense is actually also ranked 18th. So I'm just curious, why is this offense, compared to the juggernaut it was the two previous years, why is it so different? Where's the firepower?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously you go back a number of years ago, and what Tyreek Hill brought to this offense was just something different, right? And I think that's what they're trying to do by adding Xavier Worthy, and I think he has done that in moments, right? The speed that he brings on the outside to be able to stretch the defense and really make them kind of respect it. And then you get Hollywood Brown back. Remember, he missed a lot of time this year, but they got him back in the lineup, and he provided another element that defenses now had to respect going down the field. But then you always got to think about this guy wearing number 87, right? Because you just never know when he's going to break out. And then, of course, he breaks out last week against the Texans, and he does what Travis Kelce does in the postseason, and that's just dominate people, right? Another game over 100 yards receiving. And then as far as rushing game goes, it's like they're not dominant, but at any given point they can make a play or two in the game that pick up a first down, that it's an explosive run, that's maybe a check down from Mahomes to a running back, and they make a play out of it. And it's nothing that when you look at the stat sheet at the end of the game that's going to blow you away, but when you look back, it's probably one of those 5 to 7 plays where it really kind of changed the complexion of the game, and it's just a matter of who makes them. And Kansas City has been making those plays throughout the course of the season, and they've been doing it all across the field, whether it's running backs, tight ends, or wide receivers.
Derek, the Bills are wildly impressive to me, and I used to be someone pretty against Buffalo, but they've changed. They have a run game now. They are much different as far as how they even utilize the wide receivers. I think getting Stephon Diggs off the team was a very good thing for them long term, and I see a different Sean McDermott as well. What do you see differently this year out of this Bills team?
I see a team that doesn't, if you look at their skill position group, you cannot really make the argument that this is a skill position group that's going to dominate their way through the playoffs and get to a Super Bowl. And that's no offense to those guys, but like there's not a, you know, a player like a Justin Jefferson on the outside, a Ja'Marr Chase, a T. Higgins, right? Like when you think about those type of receivers where it's like, that one guy can beat you. Like, he can become a major problem. Now, I would make the argument that Khalil Shakir has kind of been that player for them, but it's not down the field. Like, he's more horizontal. He's going to run your crossing routes. He's going to try to find the open holes in the zone. And the guy is so slippery that he just continues to make plays. But, also, I mean, yes, James Cook had a fantastic year as far as rushing touchdown goes. But he wasn't Saquon Barkley. He wasn't Derrick Henry. I don't even know if I'd put him in the same conversation as far as playmaking ability as a guy like Bijan Robinson, right? But he had an awesome year, over 1,000 yards and 16 rushing touchdowns in the regular season. And he's exactly what this offense needs. The difference is you got a guy in Josh Allen that's been in the league for a long time, and he's gotten himself to the point to where he can do so much for this offense. He's not turning the ball over. He's making the right decisions in the passing game. And, oh, by the way, he's become a battering ram in the run game when they need him to at 6'5", 240 pounds. Like, you almost know what's going to happen on third and fourth and short, but teams can't stop it. And that's what he's doing, extending drives, making great decisions, and putting points on the board.
Derek, it's kind of interesting. I mentioned how during this three-peat, you saw Kansas City rebuild their defense and add names like Karlaftis and McDuffie and develop them in real time while chasing championships. This was really supposed to be the year that the Bills did that, right? I mean, you saw the formerly elite safety duo move off of Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, other names that have been there, stalwarts, kind of moving on. And yet this defense found itself again this year, and it feels like it's one of the better ones. Like, when you look at this defense and maybe compare it to Kansas City, you know, do you see them as kind of similar calibers, or do you think maybe Kansas City's might have one leg up on Buffalo?
Well, I would say from a pass rushing perspective and actual production, I would probably give a slight edge to Kansas City because of the first name that you mentioned. It's actually not even Chris Jones. Chris Jones is still an absolute beast, and he would be somebody that would worry me if I were the Buffalo Bills because he is that good that he can take over a game as well. But George Karlaftis, what he has brought to this Chiefs defense, to me, has been something special. The fact that he had 8 sacks during the regular season, 3 sacks last week. I mean, you talk about getting after the quarterback. To win in the National Football League, in my opinion, you have to get after the quarterback, you have to stop the run, and you got to create takeaways on defense. But I feel like what Kansas City has been able to do, especially in the most important moments, is they find ways to get after the quarterback, right? So that's maybe where I would give them the slight edge. But when you look at the linebackers and the secondary, I would make the argument that, yeah, you've got very similar players in what they do. They're just really gutty, hardworking players. I mean, think about, like, for the Bills, DeMar Hamlin, Rasul Douglas in the secondary. Like, those guys have been very, very solid for him. Taylor Rapp's obviously not going to play in this game. He just got ruled out today due to the injury that he sustained last week against the Ravens. So rookie Cole Bishop is likely going to have to step up. But some of the other guys that they have, I mean, they just got great leadership on that side of the ball. You got a guy in Von Miller that's trying to get to the Super Bowl with a third different team. Think about what he can bring just from a leadership perspective to this defense. I think there's a lot of similarities. Maybe pass rushing gets the edge.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you. So listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's just a little bit for Kansas City.
Who has the quarterback advantage?
I would have to go with Patrick Mahomes because of the track record that we've seen, guys. But that's by no means saying that Josh Allen is nowhere near the conversation. I mean, it's him and Lamar Jackson in the MVP race this year, guys. I mean, we're talking about the best player in the National Football League. But as it stands right now, Patrick Mahomes has won this. He has beat the Bills in the postseason. He's got an even record overall in the regular season, overall 4-4 in 8 previous matchups. But he's 3-0 against the Bills in the postseason. And at the end of the day, guys, that's what it's all about. Like, you could win all the games you want in the regular season, but who wins them when it matters most? And I got to give the edge to Patrick Mahomes because we've seen it in the past.
Derek Rackley, Westwood One on the Chiefs-Bills call this weekend. A game you can hear right here on 92.3 The Fan. He's joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. This, if the Chiefs advance to the Super Bowl, if they win, it'd be the first three-peat for Super Bowl champions in the history of the NFL. I'm just curious, as somebody who, you know, you've been on these games for a while, you're obviously calling the Chiefs games here, like, because I'm just blown away by it. Maybe I should put it in my own terms. The idea that this is something that Vince Lombardi didn't do, Tom Landry didn't do, Jimmy Johnson didn't do, Bill Walsh didn't do. I kind of feel like the significance of this has been lost because I'm just so blown away that any team might actually be able to pull this off.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I made the comment earlier about Patrick Mahomes kind of following in the footsteps of Tom Brady, and they're actually going to potentially accomplish something that Tom Brady didn't. But to me, he is Tom Brady basically in this new version. Call it the late 2010s and the 2020s, because he is that special of a player that he's getting more out of everybody else on their team than arguably anybody else is in the National Football League, because that's how you get to the Super Bowl as frequently as they have. And Tom Brady was not able to do it 3 straight times, but his ability to constantly get there and win 6 with New England, another one with Tampa Bay, And Patrick Mahomes is in. I mean, you can't look at Patrick Mahomes and say, his play is kind of declining a little bit. Like, if anything, I would say it's continuing to rise. And the way that Brett Veach and Andy Reid have built this roster, and I could make the same argument with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott with the Buffalo Bills. It's something I've been researching throughout the week. But the way that they have drafted, the way that they have rewarded guys to stay in their organization. I mean, I think the numbers are 35 and 34 that we're going to see on the field in the game this weekend were either drafted or college free agents by the personnel departments and the coaching staff. And then they've taken those guys, they've developed them, made them even better players. And that's the reason why they're sitting here in the AFC Championship game. You give the edge to the Chiefs because they got a guy named Patrick Mahomes that's doing some things that are just absolutely extraordinary. And the amount of stats and numbers that I've been reading through this week that Mahomes and the Chiefs have been able to accomplish is just astounding.
Derek, I hate that I know that Cleet Blakeman is the head ref for this upcoming game. How much have in your broadcast have you guys prepared to talk about the penalties and whether or not Mahomes takes advantage of that or gets some beneficial calls? And is that a thing for you guys?
It's not a thing. I'll tell you this. I had a colleague ask me today about what do I think about the calls with the officials and the quarterbacks. And I actually listened to an interview with Tom Brady the other day where he was asked the same question. I don't know if it's just the way that we're programmed, guys, but like as a former player, I'm not by no means, absolutely no means am I a conspiracy theorist, because some people think that the officials are out there to try to force a certain outcome. I absolutely positively do not agree with that at all, because officials are graded just as hard, if not harder, than players are, and they obviously want to be great. They want an opportunity to call a Super Bowl. I also know that the league and the officials want to protect the quarterbacks. But here's what I will also say. Everybody out there that wants to complain about officials, go be in their shoes. Go put on that jersey and go make the exact same calls in real time without the benefit of replay, which all of us viewers do, right? We get the opportunity to see things slowed down and be like, oh my gosh, they missed that call, or I can't believe they didn't make that call. They got to do it in real time. And yet everybody expects them to be 100% perfect, and they get so outraged when they miss a call. I know they're going to try to protect quarterbacks. I know they don't want to lose the integrity of the game, but they're human and they're going to make mistakes as well. As a player, you got to play through some of those decisions or those mistakes from the officials. That's what every coach will tell you. You got to play through it.
Derek, great stuff, buddy. Can't wait to hear on the call. Our listeners are going to hear it this weekend, our own station. So you guys always do such a good job. Enjoy the game and, hey, enjoy football while it lasts. Only got a couple more games left, bud.
That's right. I appreciate it. Thanks, you guys.
Derek Rackley there, Westwood One on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We got to react to what Derek had to say, and we do have to wonder if maybe the Cleveland connection is no longer enough for us. That's at 3:43 on 92.3 The Fan. I am so tired of the Chiefs. The refs are giving the Chiefs the game stuff.
It's overshadowed the game, Nick.
It has, and it's overshadowed. Like we were deciding in the break between like him saying I give Mahomes the edge to Allen in this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
That should be the narrative on this game
by a wide margin.
But people refuse to accept it. I mean, we talked about this middle of the week, and we had a video put out there, and this has become it's almost like a political issue. People have lost their reason when it comes to this. There is no financial incentive for referees to rig the game either side. There isn't. You know why? Because they're graded off their how well did you do. That's not right. How well did you do in doing good things
and
for the Chiefs.
If you do bad, they don't ask you to do these games again.
And which, by the way, for these referees who are part-timers, that means incredible amounts of money. And then, it's because of gambling. Guys, the NFL, you cannot work for the league and have one of these accounts.
I know, but the Tim Donaghy stuff stays with people's mind, and yeah. I think he set back a lot of these conversations probably until, I might be dead by the time it erases all of them.
So I always just go to, all right, who has on what side potentially has a bias, right, in terms of defending the referees or not? There is no bias to defend the referees. There isn't. I mean, in terms of like the referees having a bias or they're incentivizing. The only bias here is you don't like the Chiefs.
No,
your tinfoil hat on and somehow believe in every conspiracy out there. Like,
the
put the mushrooms
stuff,
down and chill the hell out.
I get everything that you're saying from that perspective. I do. But I do think if we actually took a real football discussion of it all, I think Mahomes has found a way to be able to bait penalties.
Yes.
And to be able to, like, I mean, LeBron gets preferential treatment. We've seen stars have preferential treatment. I think Mahomes has gotten to a spot where he's very good at understanding the moment and in real time doing something that many quarterbacks can't do, which is deciding in real time how to get the penalty, when to get the penalty, and then to actually then get the penalty.
Absolutely. So don't like...
I kind of think of it, it's kind of like a skill in many ways.
It is. And by the way, if you want to use that as justification to not like Pat Mahomes, you should. Because it's the one unlikable thing I found about him. I don't like flopping as much as the next person. I might laugh at it in the moment, but when I really start to think about how much time he's putting into doing this on the field, it is annoying. I mean, it's more annoying than Jackson Mahomes' little TikToks or whatever
annoying.
Brittany Mahomes does with her face, which is such a weird, like, if you care about that, if you judge Mahomes or her on that, you're a weird knob.
I like Brittany. I'm going to be on the record, by the way. I like Brittany.
I don't like or dislike. She exists. I exist. We're on different parallels. We
in
have different
Kansas
lives.
City, they treat her like she's a queen. They
should.
Really do.
They
do. That is the queen and king of the city.
But no, it's gotten to such a point where it's like, okay, we get it. Okay. You just admit it. You don't want the Chiefs to win, and you get infuriated that they can win. And it was easier to accept the Chiefs' dominance when it was sexy.
You saw the graphic.
It's not sexy.
But you saw the graphic that went out. Since 2021 Chiefs playoff penalties, 66 for the opponents, 36 for the Chiefs. 10 times the opponents had more penalties. Chiefs had 0 times. And 541 penalty yards of 319.
Yeah, they're the fifth least penalized team in football.
Listen, I look at it as Mahomes has just figured out how to get these things.
Well, no,
it's a skill.
Guys, they're a well-coached team. Well-coached teams don't commit a lot of penalties.
Yeah, but that would be suggesting that all these other playoff teams are just poorly coached teams. I don't know if I agree with that.
No. What I mean is, in the regular season, like, so my thing is...
is playoff penalties.
Well, yeah, I'm making a correlation. And if you were massively penalized team in the regular season, and you go to the postseason, and all of a sudden, suddenly you don't get penalties, and you're getting more penalties than normal, cool. Look at the disparity between the regular. There's no disparity between how they're called in the regular season and how they're called. That would say that how they're called in the regular season is how they're called in the postseason. Now, unless you think it's just from the second the whistle blows to the start of the season that there's some bias, okay, guys. Patrick Mahomes is just an elite football player. Chris Jones and George Karlaftis and Trent McDuffie are elite football players.
Yeah. Like, I just think it's interesting that it's dominated the week.
And
what it's supposed to be the lead up to just an awesome game and the game we've been thinking about all year long, this has dominated it. And I'm with you. I think it's wild to suggest that the Chiefs are getting preferential treatment or even Mahomes is even getting star treatment. I do think he's gotten good at figuring out how to get the calls, but I look at that like that's just something he has in his arsenal that he can use.
Yeah, and I think people are sleeping on, even bigger than Allen Mahomes, we're sleeping on a team that is on the precipice of history. I everything about the matchup itself tells me the Bills should win.
Yeah, I think the Bills are going to win, by the way.
I don't. I think the Chiefs are going to do what the Chiefs have consistently done this year.
One thing that Derek said was, he's like, well, if they need to score 6 touchdowns, they'll score 6 touchdowns. My argument against that is we haven't seen the Chiefs this season score 31.
Yeah.
And it's one thing Mahomes talked about in the regular season. He wanted to just blow out a team because they hadn't really done that. And then the week that he said that, they played in a 3-point game against the Panthers. Their offense isn't humming the way that it once did.
It isn't. I think the Chiefs are going to win, and I think it's going to be Chiefs Eagles, and I think the Chiefs are going over. Why? Because they just know how to win. At the end of the day, how you win doesn't matter as long as you know how to win. And I don't think anybody has. Suckered other teams into playing their game better than the Chiefs this year. I think the best thing for the Chiefs, by the way, is that they lose. I do, because they need to change that roster, and they've been stubborn about getting Mahomes the help he needs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to change regardless, though. I do. You have to.
Are we bringing back Tyreek Hill?
Probably not
Tyreek
Hill.
He wants out. You're bringing him back?
Would you make a Godfather offer for Garrett Wilson? Can you imagine Garrett Wilson with Pat Mahomes?
That'd be fun. I would love to see the reaction to a loss, just because I'd love to see how they reload and how they try to figure this all out, because they've really gotten comfortable with the idea that Mahomes can just turn it on, and he hasn't shown me that he can't. But at the apex for Buffalo, I don't think you can. When Buffalo, if they play their A game, nobody beats them in the NFL right now.
I don't think they're playing their A game, because I think that's something that. Because here's the thing, everybody's, and I'm not saying yours is, everybody's analysis on this game is going to come down to, well, one offense is better than the other. This is not a. I think this Chiefs defense is not something this team has seen. This Bills team has seen so far, and I think that's going to be a real. I think that's the equalizer, and it's been the equalizer all season long. And listen, this is a guy who, if I never had to watch Juwan Taylor play right tackle or DJ Humphries play left tackle or Wanya Morris, I cannot stand to watch the tackles play for Kansas City. I really can't. It's ugly. It's unnecessary. It's indecent. So we should be rooting for the Chiefs to lose. So maybe they'll do more of a turnover like you're saying. But at the same point, man, I just think the Chiefs are inevitable. And I think, because every time I've doubted them, or not me.
See,
every
I time, hadn't. That's the thing. I consistently had been, don't doubt Mahomes. It's not going to work out well for you. And this is the first year that I've come around to doubting Mahomes.
I think this is like me wanting to fire Ryan Day, or saying go ahead and fire him after the Michigan game. And then 4 games later, I'm like, okay. I was mad. You still go beat Michigan, please. I think on like 3 Mondays from now, you're going to be like, All right, I shouldn't have doubted
Mahomes. Listen, if they get into the shootout, that the one we saw with the 13-second game a couple years ago, Mahomes doesn't win that game this year.
Dane Brugler has a word of caution for Browns fans to lead off the 5 at 5 at 5:03 on 92.3 The Fan.